I don't love that it feels like one of them, either of them, any of us, but typically one of them, has the power to kind of lobby something into the atmosphere that could potentially shift the entire mood of the collective. And I sort of want them, and I know this is an unfair request of an 8 and 11-year-old and even of 40-year-olds, to care so much more about the collective than about the self that they won't lobby those things into the atmosphere that are clearly going, and once they can see that it's changing the collective, that they don't then keep scratching it. Like, you know, it's almost like they start picking at a scab and it's like, ooh, this is working out. I want to keep going with this one.
Tell Me About Your Kids is a chance for you to listen in on unscripted conversations with connected parenting specialist Bonnie Harris. As she talks with real parents like you about real struggles like yours, these counseling sessions get to the heart of why our buttons get pushed as parents and offer tips and advice useful no matter your child's age. Listen in and subscribe to let go of old habits and raise your kids in a way that feels good. If you're having a parenting challenge and need help, visit BonnieHarris.com for free resources, schedule a session, or get a free one-on-one counseling session by becoming a podcast guest. We're all in it together. You're not alone. Thanks for listening.
Tell me about your kids. Welcome back to Tell Me About Your Kids. I'm Bonnie Harris. I'm here with my buddy Adam Arnone.
Hello.
We're here on this rainy October day. How are you, Adam?
Things are all right. They're even.
Good.
And even?
Even is important.
Even is a victory.
Even is amazing.
Yeah. It is, actually.
Yeah.
Just finding balance is actually a huge win.
Yes. Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Balance. I think so. And it also seems like it could be 4 seconds of balance.
Yeah.
It could be 2 days of balance.
Interestingly, that's kind of what this podcast is focused on today.
Mm.
Although it's more about balance in Kristen's mind. Of course, it's always subjective, isn't it?
It is always subjective. And, you know, you go through this idea that just because something is annoying doesn't mean that it is doing irreparable damage on your child's mind.
Yes.
And yes. I think that that's, you know, I always find something in here that I can relate to, but damn, that feeling of just like, oh, so many of these things that we go through with kids are so annoying. They're just annoying. And they grate on you, but you can't get sucked into it. Because if you get sucked into feeling like it needs to be stopped, it needs to be fixed, then you are inserting yourself into places that you shouldn't be.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Because it's just going to end up being frustrating even more for you.
Right.
And there's a level of control that we want, but we don't really
well,
have.
And it puts such a heavy burden on your shoulders as a parent to think, you've got to change this. You've got to fix this.
We're kind of on the edge all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it doesn't take much.
Well,
and it can feel in them, everything feels just bigger. Everything feels more dramatic. Everything weighs on you more. And when you have, as Kristen talks about, you have two kids bickering in the car over what a word actually is pronounced like, and they're just going at it. And she says, you know, this conversation is stupid. It right. needs to stop.
Right.
She is not wrong.
Right. That's right.
That conversation
is
stupid and is annoying, but it's not an indicator of like a deeper problem.
Right.
And it's more about like the parent getting through it mm-hmm. as opposed to making sure, guiding the kids through it.
Yeah.
You just got to kind of let that be
yeah.
just for your own survival.
There's so many things that we can let go of that we don't think we can let go of in the family to
That's
actually
true.
Work toward a better solution. And speaking of stressors, Adam, we have a new affiliate we're working with on the podcast.
We're going to talk about the affiliates right now.
That is going to relieve stress.
That's wonderful.
In your life.
Tell me more about it.
Right. So one of them is Thrive Market. It is such a stress reliever because guess what? You don't have to go grocery shopping.
Grocery shopping
that is
either amazing or the worst.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of time.
So much time. Yeah. Who's got that time?
Who's got that?
Nobody's got that days. Time. Not that time.
So, you know, when you're thinking about what you want to, the good food you want to have for your family, and you got to figure out whether this product is good or has good ingredients or that product has good ingredients, Thrive Market kind of takes care of it because everything they have is organic and without all the crap that you don't want your family to have. And looking through it myself, there are lots of kid-friendly snacks and products that look like they really think about children and what children eat and
snacks
don't eat
key.
And all of that.
Yeah. Snacks. Snacks are the way.
Snacks are the way. They've got lots of them, a whole section. So they've got meat, seafood, all your pantry staples, supplements, all your vitamins and everything, lots of kid-friendly options. They've got lots of wine, all kinds of wine for the times when you really feel stressed.
Most of our listeners just went to Thrive Market right now. They're not even listening anymore.
Right.
They just left.
Right. Cleaning products, everything, and it's all reduced prices.
Clean with their wine.
Clean, yeah. So when you're scrubbing the sink, you can be drinking a glass of wine at
that's
the
right.
same time.
That's right.
I think that's good. And here's the special thing. Everybody pay attention. For the month of October, new members to Thrive Market will receive $60 in free groceries and free shipping when you join Thrive Market.
You're losing money not doing it.
Right. Go to the liner notes, the show notes, whatever you call that. Click on the link that says join Thrive Market, and it'll take you to the page that will help this podcast
definitely
and help you.
Which is a win-win-win.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Yeah.
Which is what we want.
I've joined.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
It's we wouldn't it's push good. Something we didn't believe in. That'd be ridiculous.
You better believe it.
You know?
That is for sure.
That's right. So thrive with Thrive.
That's right.
Is that their motto? It should
I don't
be.
Know. It should be. Maybe you need to write
did
them.
We got to go. I have to trademark that right now. And make a bunch of money selling it to Thrive. All right, then. Well, on to the real show. And thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe. Here we go.
Discomfort does not always indicate disaster. Children's disruptive behavior, something to be expected in every family, may cause discomfort and annoyance, even uncertainty and doubt. But when it triggers anger and fear, chances are the roots go back into the past. It's rarely about the behavior, and more about what the behavior has triggered in the parent. Welcome to the show, Kristen. I'm glad to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about your kids.
Well, I have two children, two boys. Andrew is newly 11 this month, and Jesse is 8 and a half. And they are a lot of fun, have a lot of energy, and I'd love to talk about them.
All right. So do you have a particular concern that you would like to start off with?
Yeah. So my kids are 2.5 years apart, and I'm actually also I have an older sibling. We're 2.5 years apart as well. Ah. Overall, they get along really well. They play well. They're actually quite silly together. If anything, sometimes they drive me a bit crazy because they can laugh a lot and get really silly. My mom, when she visits, often says how nice it is to see them playing so well together. And, you know, you don't always see siblings who have fun together. Mm. So that's all true. And I have a really hard time when they bicker. I've been noticing that when they have these sort of back and forth arguments, I'm happy to describe a few. I just get so, it's when I yell the most as a parent right now, and I don't mm-hmm. typically yell. And so I'm curious what's going on for me that I get so triggered that I start yelling at them.
Mm. It's a really good thing to be aware of, and that you have kind of put your thoughts to that. What's going on with me when I get triggered? Give me some examples of when this happens.
So I can give you a bit of background, too, on just their relationship. I will say mm-hmm. I think it's important that I am one of two siblings, and I'm the younger. And I was really interested to kind of watch my older son navigate his way into being the older sibling when Jesse was born. And I both realized how much power I found the older one really has to control the atmosphere from my vantage point, and also mm-hmm. how much was put on their shoulders. And I know there's some stories in their past that sort of are emblematic of maybe learnings and or mistakes I made. So one example is Andrew always wanted to be first, everything. First to put his shoes on, first to get dressed, first to get my hug. He would kind of always orchestrate the situation. And Jesse—
And he's the older.
He's the older. And Jesse, mm-hmm. the younger, would be second. So one morning I was getting cereal out for the two of them. They were probably 4 and 2. And Andrew said, I'm going to be first. You know, I want my Cheerios first. And I said, you know what? No, I think it's everyone needs a turn to be first. I want to have Jesse be first today. And Jesse started hysterically crying. And he said, I want to be second, but I'm second. And so that was a good example of me realizing, okay, they have a thing. I don't need to interfere. This is my issue, not theirs. Like Jesse's, at that moment, wonderful. At that age, he was very comfortable being second.
I love that. And I love everybody hearing that, because we make these assumptions, and our assumptions are just that. They are our assumptions. They are not the truth, and something that seems so definitely clear. Yeah, of course Jesse would want to be first sometimes, but no.
There is this give and take. There's some real clear first child, I need to be first, things going on. And then there's a lot of compromise and accommodation. I think there's a real balance there that I'm trying to honor. I think one thing that is hard for me is I do think Andrew can sometimes control the mood of his brother. And so these arguments, this bickering that happens, I think is a sign of that. So here's an example from last week. We were driving to school, and Jesse, the 8-year-old, says, hey, mommy, I just saw this funny sign. It said one way, but way was spelled W-E-Y. That's really funny.
Hmm.
And I said, that is funny. And Andrew said, well, that's not way. That would be pronounced we. W-E-Y would be we. And Jesse said, no, it's way. W-E-Y would be pronounced way. No, it's we. No, it's way. Back and forth, right? This back and forth. And, you know, in that moment, I said, we really don't know. There's no way to know how to pronounce W-E-Y. It's not a word that we all know. But they kept going at it. And Andrew really laid into the fact that he was sure it was wet. It was we. And then Jesse got really upset and sort of grunted and, you know, kind of shut down and stomped off to school in a huff. Not that day, but often I'm just start saying, this is a stupid conversation. This is stupid. Stop. Mm-hmm. We're stopping the conversation. This is stupid. And I mean, it's just so not my character to say that, even that word stupid, but I get so frustrated by those conversations.
So can you identify what was going on in your head when this happened?
I think I feel like it's just so unnecessary. Like, why should we have this great morning turn into this, you know, moody, stomping mess because we're arguing about a word that doesn't even exist and how to pronounce it? And can we just leave it alone? Like, it's sort of, does someone have to be right here? Can we just leave this thing alone? It just feels like, a shame to sort of change the whole mood of the car based on this, you know, really ridiculous conversation.
So when you get angry about it, what do the boys do? How do they handle that?
Sometimes they stop. I don't, you know, because I get pretty mad. Sometimes they keep going back and forth. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Whatever the thing is. Sometimes one of them under their breath kind of gets in the last word, and then the other one really shuts down.
And that goes back and forth. It's not typically one of them.
It depends. I would say they're equally back and forth, but maybe Andrew tries to get in the last word a bit more, and he can't let things go as easily. Well, I mean, honestly, neither of them can let it go. He won't let it go with his words. Jesse will shut down and won't let it go in his emotions. So they both hold on to it.
So tell me what you expect, because one of the reasons you're getting triggered by it and get so angry about it is because they are not meeting your expectation. So what is it that you expect?
I guess I expect that we don't need unnecessary fractures to our family harmony, that we all value sort of a harmonious environment. And so we will maintain it if we can. And I think these arguments feel very silly and almost intentionally breaking up the harmony for reasons I don't understand.
Okay, so it sounds to me like your idea of harmony in the family is that everybody agrees.
Well, I don't mind if they disagree. Like in that example, I said we won't know. You might both be right. I've tried the line. We can agree to disagree. You might both be right. Two things can be true. I've said, you know, so it's more that we agree that the argument is not necessary.
Right. So one of the things we've got to understand as parents is how critical the gap is between our agendas and our kids' agendas. Your agenda is to have harmony and not argue over stupid things, over things that you deem to be silly, right? That is pointless to you. Their agenda is to argue with each other, right? Their agenda is to get the better of each other. Their agenda is to be right. And no matter what the situation is, that need to be right is probably, and of course I'm making assumptions, it's probably something that, you know, typically builds up over time. And maybe Andrew has, in Jesse's mind, maybe Andrew has won, so to speak, for a while, or vice versa. And so they're going to take something like the pronunciation of a word, doesn't have anything to do with that, and go at it to try to be right. It's completely their agenda and their relationship and what they've got to work out in their relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is why it bothers you so much. These are kids who, as you say, get along a great deal of the time and enjoy each other and play together and have a one-upmanship, which is pretty typical.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me about your relationship with your sister.
Yeah, my sister and I are close. You know, now we're in our 40s, obviously. We've been close for a long time. But as children, at some point, you know, I know we played together and we got along, but we were pretty different personalities, approaches, let's say, to growing up. And so I know we bickered a lot. I know we fought over things like the clothes that we stole from each other's closets. Mm-hmm. She had a much harder adolescence, ended up going to boarding school. And I know that did take up a lot of space in the house for me.
What kind of space did it take up for you?
What I know is that I was like very clear in my head, sort of subconsciously as a high school kid, that I wasn't going to let the stuff she was going through kind of bring me down. And I was having I had a great time in high school. I played sports. I had a lot of friends. I did a lot of activities. I really loved my high school experience. And I think I was determined not to let that get impacted by sort of maybe the emotional stuff going on or, you know, the needs that might be in my house that felt overwhelming. She had an eating disorder for a period. So, you know, my parents were super responsive and really helpful to her. Though they were divorced at the time, so it wasn't that they were together working on it in the actual physical house. But I think I saw sort of like a lot of emotion, and I didn't really want a lot to do with that. Like a lot of sitting around and processing or going to family therapy and things that as a 14-year-old, didn't look like the way I wanted to spend my time. There was an undercurrent of stress, but there were episodes in our growing up where we really didn't connect. I think sometimes we bickered. Sometimes I think we were just more disconnected. So we haven't always been very close and harmonious, I guess, is what I was trying to allude to.
Right. And I think there's some worry from that that is what's triggering to you when you see your boys not being harmonious.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
What went on with in your family with your sister imprinted on you, certainly, no matter how serious it is, and this doesn't sound like it was a big, serious, traumatic thing, but it affected your adolescence at a very important time. And you had some strong feelings about it, even though right now it's hard to recall. And that's what comes up in your subconscious mind, I believe, when you see your boys bickering. You don't want anything like that happening. You want to give your boys the happy, fun, silly family times that you didn't have. Kristen's sister's issues caused problems for Kristen at a time in her life when one's family is either cool or embarrassing. Other families looked like they were having a lot more fun. Kristen shared that her family was in turmoil, but protected her from it. Knowing that she was protected means she suspected more going on than she was privy to. Carrying on her life as she wanted, if not causing guilt, can cause a sense of aloneness, separateness from her family, something she fights against happening in her current family. You're making assumptions about their bickering. You're making some decisions in your mind about what they're doing with each other that is causing you to feel upset.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how our reactions come to be. We have a thought about something. That thought, the boys are being stupid. This is not harmonious. This is not how I want. Whatever thoughts come up in your mind are what lead to your emotion, your anger, your determination to stop this.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe one way I could say it is I don't love that it feels like one of them, either of them, any of us, but typically one of them, has the power to kind of lobby something into the atmosphere that could potentially shift the entire mood of the collective. And I sort of want them, and I know this is an unfair request of an 8 and 11-year-old and even of 40-year-olds, to care so much more about the collective than about the self that they won't lobby those things into the atmosphere that are clearly going, and once they can see that it's changing the collective, that they don't then keep scratching it. Like, you know, it's almost like they start picking at a scab and it's like, oh, this is working out. I'm going to keep going with this one. As opposed to like, oh, that's, you know what? I should probably stop with this scab and put a Band-Aid on it. I didn't want to make that entire scab come off. So I think that's, and maybe that connects a bit to sort of
but the, that's what you don't want.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want the scab to come off, right?
Yeah.
Because you want the collective to stay harmonious. I hear blame as an undercurrent of what Kristen laid on her sister for causing disharmony in her family. Why couldn't her sister see that she kept picking at a scab? Why couldn't she stop for the good of the family? As an adolescent, Kristen was not yet able to understand the cause of her sister's troubles. She saw that her sister kept needlessly picking away at the scab, so the family could not find harmony, as her boys seemed to keep doing. Kristen's anger at the boys' bickering covers her fear that her family is destined for disharmony as well. Below fear is always sadness. Kristen's sadness for the family fun she wished for. But you're also making an assumption that their bickering over something you consider stupid is going to affect the collective.
Right.
That's what's very interesting to me, because I think it's more the collective of what you wanted in your family. You wanted all of you. You had friends who had families they were having fun with, and you wanted your collective in your family to be happy and doing fun things together. So let's talk about why it is that you think their bickering affects the whole collective. What it is doing right now is affecting how you feel.
Right.
I think you're assuming that how you feel is how the collective feels.
That's right.
What you have control over is you, not them. And I think that's one of the things that is really hard to let go of as a parent, is that we don't really have control over our children. And when we try to control, it's all about crossing a boundary, really. This is their problem, determining how to pronounce the word W-E-Y, right?
Yep.
That's their problem.
Yep.
What prevents you from staying out of it and just letting them go at it?
I don't know.
I think it's this idea of the collective, that you've got to kind of be on the same page, and some, maybe not the same page, but they shouldn't argue over something so stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Or something that you see as stupid. That's your problem. Your problem is you think they're arguing over something stupid. Their problem is trying to convince the other how you pronounce that word.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. I think what I feel is like, even if I could sort of just mentally turn it off, be like, okay, that's their problem. Let's see how this is going to turn out. Who knows how to pronounce this word? I have a strong sense, and it usually is true, that I will end up with a very upset Jesse in this scenario, let's say, that I then that does become my problem, or that feels like that becomes my problem.
All right. That's your fear, is that Jesse is going to end up upset and that's going to be your problem.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse's upset is his problem. That doesn't mean you can't help, but his upset never should be your problem. And this is the boundary. This is where a good, healthy boundary is needed, because when you think his upset is your problem, then it becomes your job to make sure he doesn't get upset. Or if he does get upset, that you've got to then make him not upset. And so the whole thing becomes your problem. And to prevent your problem, you want to get them to stop bickering.
Yep.
So if you have a healthy boundary here and let them go at it, let's say your fear of Jesse getting upset comes true and Jesse ends up in tears. What would you typically do in a situation like that?
I typically sit next to him. I'd rub his back. He would tell me why he's upset. I would say, that sounds really hard. I understand. You really thought you were pronouncing it right. You're frustrated that your brother kept telling you it was wrong. And we would sort of sit there, maybe give him a hug if he wants one. And, you know, eventually he would fade out of it.
So what is your problem in that?
I don't know. I guess it's tiring to do it a lot. You know, sometimes then it can be like a little domino effect. So then if Jesse's getting attention for being upset, then sometimes Andrew, you know, does something to sort of, you know, come in. So then there can be, you know, another different vying for attention.
And that happens because you get involved in the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So if you let it be their problem, then I think your worry is that it's going to affect the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And you are in control of the collective. And the collective is a reflection of you.
Mm.
And that's giving you an enormous amount of responsibility.
Yeah.
Where's your husband in all of this?
The bickering does not bother him like it does me. And he often lets them work it out.
Which goes to show you that it really is your button.
Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's my, yeah. Yeah.
So he's fine with them bickering. He lets them work it out. It's not a big deal.
I mean, once in a while, he'll say, like, okay, enough, like, stop. Or if someone's really grating on the other, he might say, like, stop the conversation. But he lets it go on longer than I do, and he's just not as triggered by it.
What does he think about your upset with it?
He's just more supportive. I think sometimes if I get really triggered, he'll say, like, do you want a break? Do you want to take a walk? Like, he'll more nice. Do those kinds of things, sort of to help reflect back that maybe I need a break.
Yeah. Right, right. But he doesn't get on you about, why do you get so upset with him?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Great.
No.
And he never complains about the collective, in his own words about it, being disharmonious.
I guess not in the way I'm talking about it now. I mean, he also, I don't think, loves it when something, again, the sort of analogy of something gets lobbed into the atmosphere and then we're all dealing with the fallout. Yeah, I think he's more patient with it bouncing back.
Mm-hmm. You know, in every family on the face of the earth, I think things are going to get lobbed into the atmosphere that have to be dealt with.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hard one to try to control.
Yeah.
If you don't do anything about the bickering and leave it to them, what's the risk for you?
Short term, I think it is just, you know, someone might be in tears, someone might be upset, we might knock it out of the house in time, or someone's refusing to go to school because they're in a bad mood. So, you know, some of the things like dinner or the activities we're trying to go to, we might get disrupted. I think the risks are actually quite low. I think I don't like the way it feels. I don't like the way it feels to have this house of
yes.
I just don't like it. There's so many other important reasons to have all these emotions. These just feel like, come on. Like, let's just not do this.
Right. So therefore, what I'm wanting to help you understand is that you can change how you feel by changing what you think about it.
Yeah.
That's the process. So it's what you think about it that's coming up from your past, your childhood, your fears about what the disruption could be, what your job as their mother is, all of that. It's protecting the collective from the disruption of their bickering.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe that is your job. And I think when you make it your job, you are putting a stress on yourself that you don't need. And that's what you don't like the feeling of.
Mm-hmm.
So you can let go of that stress. You can let go of that pressure by thinking differently about what's going on with them, by reframing your perception of their bickering. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so right now, and see if you can come up with a thought that you have about it. It's something about they're disrupting the collective. They're not doing it right. They're something. Can you come up with?
I mean, disrupting the collective actually kind of works for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now how can you think about reframing that?
Well, I like the idea of them figuring out their own relationship because that's something we all have to do with our siblings in life. Mm-hmm. So I like, mm-hmm. you know, the idea of like, this is the trajectory or the growth or the developmental stage. There's like different developmental stages of their relationship. And this is building some kind of foundation or threads that are important to the longer term goals. Like if I can get my head around that, it's sort of like when they're learning to tie their shoes and it's so painful to watch because it's so slow. Mm-hmm. But then eventually they learn to tie their shoes. So if it's sort of in that spirit, I could reframe it.
You are in fact doing a service to them mm-hmm. by stepping out of their arguments.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your definition of the collective?
I think it's the four of us.
Your husband's not bothered by it. The kids aren't bothered by it.
Well, they're bothered by it.
I know what you're saying. They're bothered by it, and they get upset with each other. But that's what kids do. That's what right. siblings do in order to volley and figure out who they are in mm-hmm. their lives. Mm-hmm. It's very important that siblings have that kind of sparring with each other. I mean, you can be supportive of each of them, but that's another conversation. You've got to get out of it first
yeah.
in order to be supportive. Right now, you're looking at your fear is about Jesse being upset about it and what you have to do to help Jesse feel better.
Right. And the reframing, the tying the shoe thing is actually kind of helpful because I also remember, mm-hmm. you probably could explain this better than I can, but there's something about the brain as it's learning that, so let's pretend you're learning to tie your shoe and then the toddler kind of melts down and has a big, you know, just cries and cries because mm-hmm. they can't do it. And then they come back at it in a couple hours or a couple days later and they can do mm-hmm. it. And something about that mm-hmm. meltdown actually helped their brain work out what it was trying mm-hmm. to do.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did, you know, teach them to tie their shoes and watch them go through that struggle, I felt for them when they were upset that they couldn't get it right. But I also knew that was part of the process of uh-huh. getting there.
Yes.
And so if I sort of reframe their bickering as, you know, I can feel for them in the process of how hard it can feel in the moment and know it's...
And that's called empathy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Part of them getting there to having a solid, connected relationship mm-hmm. with each other and with themselves. Yeah, that's a really helpful reframing.
Great. It's something that they're working through. It's part of the process. And you interfere with that process when you get involved and get upset about it. Now, I'm saying this about this particular situation. There are a lot of sibling fights that are fraught with resentment and deep, deep, deep anger. This is not one of them. And so this is talking to you with boys who typically get along pretty well and are doing very normal bickering. So it's not about the bickering. It's about you. So hopefully we've tapped into something that you can practice. You know, you've got to keep practicing that reframing. The more you're able to do the reframing, the sooner you'll be able to step out of the problem so that it won't be your problem. When it's not your problem, you're not going to have the pressure of what you have to do for the collective.
Yep. One thing I could work on is physically removing myself from the room when it's happening as a reminder to myself that I don't need to be there for that exchange. So I can start with that.
And also remember that Jesse's upset, if that is what happens more often, has become dependent on you stepping in to help him and be there with him. And if you can remove yourself more, Jesse will be better served so that he can learn how to deal with it himself and not vie for your affection in those moments.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so try it out and hopefully it'll make a little dent in it and just keep working at it. Thanks so much for telling me about your kids.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. I'm Bonnie Harris. If you're curious to learn more or would like to talk to me personally, check out my website, bonnieharris.com, where you can also find my books, When Your Kids Push Your Buttons and Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids. There are also links in the liner notes. And please subscribe to Tell Me About Your Kids on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell Me About Your Kids is produced and scored by Echo Finch.